Before we get started for this morning, I had just a couple of things that I wanted to talk about. Braden, if you want to advance that, I think I've got a next. Yes. So I was telling my Bible study class this morning that if it feels like we, as of last week, like jumped way forward in the Old Testament, and then you're looking in your Bible and you're like, wait a minute, Ryan, why did we go way back this week? I told you this, and I'm going to keep on telling you this. The Bible, the English Bible that you have in front of you, is not in chronological order. And so a lot of things don't make sense when you read the story. But I've got a timeline up here that's kind of helpful. I'm not going to leave it up here forever. If you would like this timeline, I can send it to you. It's specifically the Old Testament. And you will see that if you move down here, and in the period of the kings, about middle point there, all the way almost down to the bottom, you'll see Jonah there. That's what we did last week. And then if you move yourself a couple hundred, 300 years, over here in Babylonian exile, there's one little guy over there, Daniel, all right? So we are staying in order, all right? It doesn't look like it. In your Bible, you're like, why are you jumping all over the place? We are right on target with where we need to be. And that's where we find ourselves. We have come through all of these periods here that we've talked about over the last several months. In the periods of the kings, we just came out a lot of that. And now we find ourselves in exile. Next week, we will find ourselves in exile in the book of Esther. And then the last Sunday of this month, we will find ourselves in post-exile in the book of Nehemiah. All right? So we are coming very close to exiting the Old Testament, which it kind of makes me sad because we were talking this morning, there are so many great stories in the Old Testament, so many epic stories in the Old Testament, but we are coming to the end. We'll end this month, like I said, in Nehemiah. And then we're going to spend the whole month of July in the book of Isaiah. So this is the only time, and I apologize, but there's a reason for it. And I'm going to tell you why, and I'll probably tell you again. As you will see, you're like, hey, Ryan, that doesn't work. You're in Nehemiah, and then you're going to go all the way back to Isaiah in the period of the kings. Well, that's the one time that we do this, and we get a little bit out of chronological order. And we do this for this very reason. Isaiah is so heavy in messianic prophecy. Isaiah is so heavy in telling us about Jesus and preparing us for Jesus. And if you were to guess, after the month of July, when we go to August, who do we talk about and who shows up on the scene? Jesus. Levi and I just felt like it wasn't really necessarily in the curriculum, but we said we really are kind of cheating ourselves if we don't take some time to slow down and really talk through Isaiah and specifically kind of the plan that God has for his people and preparing us for the Messiah. And so we're going to do that in July. And here's how we're going to look at it. We're going to do Christmas in July is what we're going to have, basically, for a whole month. And then Jesus shows up on the scene in August. But first, before we get to all of that, we have to talk about our buddy. And I'm going to ask a question, and it's going to be and seem like a really silly question, but I think it's one that needs to be asked because, again, it frames everything that we're going to talk about this morning. Is there anybody in here this morning, anybody who might be watching at home who has been up against it in the recent past? Or maybe where you sit right now this morning, you're up against something in your life. A situation that's either frustrating, disappointing, or trying. Anybody with me this morning? Yes, we're all there. Maybe you're finding yourself increasingly at odds with the environment and the world around you. You're challenged by insurmountable odds that seem to be stacked against you, or you're disappointed by the wrenches that life has thrown at you. I really feel that probably right now you're going, check, yeah, check. Everybody is with me right now. Whatever the case may be, this short story for this morning, this much beloved story that we will talk about this morning, will remind us exactly where things stand, no matter how bleak and how bothersome life seems. And I just really feel like, guys, I was just telling my Bible study group this morning, this is probably one of my favorite Old Testament books because it is just so timeless. There is not an era that you read this book in and you're like, this has nothing to say to me. It is a timeless book and it is a timely book. The words you're going to hear this morning are exactly the words you need to hear. In Daniel chapter 6, we have a truth that I believe each one of us needs to hear today and always. A Bible study group, this is the point where you participate, all right? Because we've already said this phrase many times. In spite of present appearances, what, guys? God is in control. Let me hear that again. God is in control. That is the message, that is a theme of all of the book of Daniel, but especially here in Daniel chapter 6. Guys, God will ultimately and he will always be victorious. He will win in the end over seemingly powerful forces set against him and against his people. And as such, the story this morning is a message of comfort to those who find themselves feeling defeated. You feel defeated? People who see that living in a hostile and an unfriendly world is becoming more and more difficult. You feel like you live in a hostile and unfriendly world? Absolutely, we do. There's a reason for that. We'll get to that. And much like last week, but I feel like it's just like every week now, we have these, you could make a really great, well, I mean, VeggieTales did it. They made a great movie out of Jonah, but like a Hollywood movie out of Jonah. You can make a Hollywood movie out of Elijah and Mount Carmel. You can make a really great, epic, adventurous movie out of Daniel. It has all the makings of a summer blockbuster. I look at Daniel, I think it's kind of like a mix of like Harry Potter meets Lord of the Rings with a dash of Star Wars thrown in. Like, that's powerful, guys. Our story for this morning has it all. Action, intrigue, espionage, lions, liars, and lords. It has everything. You're like, stop, man, that's too much. So I want you to sit back, or better yet, I want you to sit up this morning, and I want you to grab your popcorn and enjoy this episode in Daniel's life. But I don't want you this morning to just sit back and just spectate, oh, Ryan, tell us stuff. No. I want you to be on the lookout this morning for what God is revealing about himself and how he is calling us to live in a world that is ferocious and all-consuming. I want you to turn your eyes and your ears and your hearts towards the one who is always with us and is speaking the truth that in the moments where we seem to be in the most impossible situations, where things are completely out of our control, and precisely those are the moments that God is completely in control. Guys, in the places where it is hottest, darkest, or the most ferocious, that's exactly where you find almost every single time God. Daniel chapter 6, first three verses. Here we go. Darius the Mede decided to divide the kingdom into 120 provinces. If you have time, I would encourage you to go back and read chapter 5, because you're like, where in the world did this Darius, which actually his name is pronounced, so I'll probably say a combination of Darius and Darius. Darius is the proper pronunciation. Go read chapter 5. It tells you where Darius enters into the story, and it's literally, I'm not even saying this, it's literally overnight this guy shows up. The Babylonian king has been killed, and Darius shows up, and the Medo-Persian Empire begins its rule and reign. And Darius decides to divide his kingdom into 120 provinces, and he appointed a high officer to rule over each province. And the king also chose Daniel, here he is, Daniel and two others as administrators. You could almost think of these guys like presidents, if you will. Like, he's got three presidents here that he's using to look over all of these 120 officials. And why does he do that? To protect the king's interests. Translated, what's that mean there, guys? The king doesn't want to lose any money. And so you can imagine, with a far-flung empire all over the place, he's got to put 120 guys over this to make sure all the taxes get collected, all the money gets taken in. But what happens when 120 guys get their sticky little fingers on money? Starts going in pockets and robes and everything. So these three guys, Daniel and these two other administrators, are the top guys. They're like, we aren't going to let anything happen. We're going to protect the king's interests. And here's what it says in verse 3. Listen to this. This is very important. Daniel soon proved himself more capable than all of the other administrators and high officers. And because of Daniel's great ability, the king made plans to place him over the entire empire. Now, when this chapter opens, Daniel is now 80 plus. You know, you remember Daniel when he came into the kingdom of Babylon, he was just a teenager. He has lived for the full 70 years in captivity in Babylon. And he is an 80-year-old man at this point. He's not a spring chicken anymore. It's quite possible, actually, that Daniel was in semi-retirement when Darius pulled him out and said, I want you to be an administrator. He had heard of Daniel and Daniel's wisdom. If he seems to probably be fully out of the political scene, but he has served faithfully for decades. To put it into perspective, by the way, for how long Daniel was at the highest levels of government in both Babylon and Medo-Persia, earning the trust of the rulers, many different rulers and kings, Daniel would have risen the ranks. And I've got a picture here to kind of put this in perspective. He would have risen to the ranks in the administration of Harry Truman. And he would have served all of these presidents all up to the present time. 14 presidents. That's astonishing. Over 70 years of faithful service at the highest levels of government. It's honestly, I mean, just looking at that picture right there, that's unthinkable. You're like, a guy started with Harry Truman and he's still with Biden today. That's insane. It's even more insane when you think of the ancient culture of this day, where it was unthinkable. I mean, like, it was nothing for these guys to just dispatch of anybody at a moment's notice. I'm done with you. But to be this faithful and this consistent and this wise and this useful for all of this reign for over 70 years, this is where Daniel finds himself. Which, this is just an aside, but I was thinking about this. It tells me one very important thing, and I really want you guys to tune in. I especially want my seasoned saints to tune in right now. If there's any guy in here especially who this morning is thinking, I'm as good as done. I'm way past my prime. Daniel is exhibit A that, guess what, guys? Old guys can still get stuff done. Right? Amen? Oh man, you guys, don't any of you think, oh, I'm done. Just put me out of pasture. No. You are fruitful as long as you are faithful. And you are faithful until the day that you die. For everyone sitting here that's thinking they're past the age of usefulness, age has nothing to do with fruitfulness. Availability does. But guys, this isn't what makes Daniel special or successful, not just because he has outlasted everybody else and he's some old guy sitting at the top of this kingdom. What makes Daniel stand out is a very simple phrase that we find right at the start of this story in this episode in Daniel's life. I want you to look at verse 3 again. It says, Daniel proved himself. He rose above all these other administrators. And because of Daniel's great ability is what it says here. And you're like, well, what does that mean, Ryan? Like, great ability, that can mean a whole lot of different things. Because of his great ability, he experienced fruitfulness in everything he did. The actual phrase is better translated, and the King James Version does a great job here. They translate this that he had an extraordinary or an exceptional spirit. And it shows up constantly in the story in the early chapters of Daniel. In chapter 4, verse 8, it says this about Daniel. They're talking about him. And Nebuchadnezzar has this dream, and he says, guys, I need all of my fortune tellers to tell me this dream. And it says in verse 8, alas, Daniel came in before the king and told him the dream. His name was Belteshazzar, after my God. And it says right here, and the spirit of the holy gods is in him. Verse 18, it says again, very similarly, Belteshazzar, that was the dream that I, King Nebuchadnezzar, had. Now tell me what it means, for none of the wise men of my kingdom can do so. But you can tell me because what? The spirit of the holy gods is in you. That's not the last time we see this. Chapter 5, verse 12. This man Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar, has exceptional ability. Extraordinary ability. Verse 14, two verses later, I have heard that you have the third time it said this in just two chapters, the spirit of the gods within you. And then we get to verse 3 of chapter 6. Because of Daniel's great, exceptional, extraordinary ability, it was obvious that God was not just with him, but in him. He rose to the top and he became successful. Guys, Daniel's rise to influence is not so much attributed to his natural abilities and his giftings. Those didn't hurt. But it had everything to do with his walk with and the work of God in his life. I'm going to say this phrase, and it's going to carry us through the whole time, is Guy's strong commitment to God's name and to his glory and to his truth will often set us at odds with people. It will. I mean, that's my sermon today. Guess what? Buckle up, boys and girls, because if you stand for God, it's going to put you in opposition with everybody else. Strong commitment to God's name and glory and truth will often set us at odds with others, but we stand out when we stick close to God. Guys, obedience, true, godly, biblical obedience will sometimes, and I think many times, mean going in the opposite direction. You ever feel like a salmon that's just swimming upstream in this world? Like, what am I doing? I feel like I'm wearing myself out. Just keep going. Keep swimming up that stream. As we'll find out this morning, it doesn't just mean swimming upstream or walking the opposite direction. It also might mean you being thrown to the lions. Maybe not literally, but figuratively. As a man by the name of Bill Peel says, he says this, we will never, he didn't say that, I just added all that, reach a point in life where we can expect smooth sailing. You having troubles in your life? Feel like this world's ferocious? Feel like you're going in the opposite direction? Feel like everything's a struggle? Feel like you're frustrated? Good. You're right where you need to be. Can never expect smooth sailing. As long as we walk this planet, the potential of an attack is always present. The nature of the Christian faith, guys, marks all of us. It marks our lives for the lions because we are out of step with the world around us. And again, I'm telling you, if you feel that way, I'm out of step. Something feels out of sync. Something does not feel right about me being in this world and relating to this world. You're fine. You are exactly where you need to be. Now, it doesn't mean be a really big weirdo just because you want to be a weirdo. But if you want to stand out and you want to do things God's ways and be obedient to God's ways, keep doing it. 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 12, Paul tells us this, everyone who wants to live a godly life in Christ Jesus will suffer persecution, hard times, trials, difficulties, disappointments. It's gonna happen. I'm going to be really super duper blunt. Like if you haven't gotten this between all this that I've said here, I want to say it really, really blunt. The world hates you. The world hates us because the world cannot stand biblical morality and truth. What does Jesus say in John 16, 33, very famously and familiarly? What does he say? John 16, 33? There we go. I've told you all this. He's telling his guys, I've told you guys this, so that you may have peace in me. Here on this earth, you will have many trials. You will have sorrows, but take heart because I have overcome the world. Guys, that Daniel surpassed all of these other overseers and all these other satraps may indicate that he was especially effective in preventing the king from suffering loss. That's what it says here at the beginning. Why did he raise these people up? So they could protect the king's interest. So he didn't suffer loss. Which I think begins to explain the hostility against Daniel. I think we have to ask that question. We're like, I don't get it. I mean, I sort of get it, like, but I don't get it. Why in the world are these guys so mad at Daniel that they would do what they did to him? Guys, you understand what Daniel is, don't you? He is an unrelenting whistleblower. Like anything that was not good and godly, he's like, no, that's not right. Like, Daniel, could you just shut up one time, please? Just shut up and let us get away with this. And Daniel goes, nope, I'm not. That's why Daniel begins to rise. And the king, and it says the king finally decides, I want to put you over the entire kingdom. He was a whistleblower. And whatever the details, Daniel was impeccable. We're going to read about that here in just a minute. He was impeccable, and because he was impeccable and he had morality, he was so hateable. Can I just ask you really honestly, you know that person, right? The person that always has to be the tattletale? The person that always has to do whatever is right. The goody two-shoes. And sometimes, what do you want to do to that person? Punch them square in the face. That's Daniel. He was a snitch. And you know what they say about snitches, don't you? Snitches get stitches. Daniel's lucky he didn't get beat up. I've got this comic strip up here. Actually, and very interestingly, this was the very first Peanuts comic strip cartoon from Charles Schulz. And it has to go really well with our sermon for this morning. Over in the very left hand here, it says, "Well, here comes old Charlie Brown." Good old Charlie Brown, yes, sir. Good old Charlie Brown. And as Charlie Brown gets by, "How I hate him," is what it says. It's exactly what it was. Probably to Daniel's face, everybody loved Daniel, but he was one of the highest ranking officials in the land. You've got to love the guy. "I love you, Daniel. I love you, Daniel. Oh, here comes Daniel. You know, good old Daniel, right? I hate that guy." I mean, it's the same thing we were talking about. The people in your life that you're like, "Would you just shut up one time? Would you just stop? Would you not tell the truth, please? Oh, he's so great. Person of character, great, upstanding, whatever. I can't stand that guy. I can't stand her." Guys, it is a tribute to Daniel's extraordinary spirit that his enemies arrived at the conclusion that they could take him down only if they resorted to some sort of elaborate deception to do with his relationship with God. This is the irony of ironies. They wanted to use his morality and turn it into an immorality, to turn it into a wrong. They simply knew that Daniel would not stop walking with and worshiping his God. That's how dedicated and devoted and committed and consistent he was in his walk with God. What he did in public, he did in private. What he said he was going to do, he would do. The dilemma and the deception here in this chapter comes from the animosity that this world has for those who wholeheartedly serve God. That was the case under Babylonian rule. Think fiery furnace, Daniel chapter 3. And now under Persian rule here in Daniel chapter 6. Because it doesn't matter where you are and what time of history you find yourself in, the world hates you and me. It hates devoted followers because they have a quiet faithfulness that cannot be explained and cannot be eroded. John 15, 19. Jesus says, "The world would love you as one of its own if you belong to it. But you are no longer part of the world. I chose you to come out of the world, so it hates you." I mean, it's not rocket science, but we often forget this stuff, don't we? And I'm really convinced, guys, that much like Daniel, the power of quiet faithfulness, an excellent spirit, an extraordinary spirit is what will turn a watching world to the glory of Christ. Which, by the way, he himself is the epitome, the ultimate reality of what it means to display quiet faithfulness, isn't he, Jesus? What does it say in Isaiah 53, 7? "He, Jesus, was oppressed and treated harshly, yet he never said a word." You'll notice as we read the story that Daniel doesn't say a word until verse 21, and even then he only says two verses worth of words. That's quiet faithfulness. Guys, Daniel 6 reminds God's people, don't think that Daniel's is an exceptional situation. It's an exemplary situation, but this is the way it is with God's people, God's servants in this world. You will be opposed, but you stand out with quiet faithfulness. But Daniel's success also hinged on something else. Another S, if you will. It wasn't just that he stood out, but through everything, and I really think this right here, guys, this is the money part, the meat of the sermon right here. Didn't just stand out, he stayed consistent with everything in his life. Guys, we stay committed even when we are contradicted because that's what God calls us to. Daniel chapter 6, moving on here, verse 4. "Then the other administrators and high officers began searching for some kind of fault in the way Daniel was handling his government affairs. But they couldn't find anything to criticize or condemn." That's unheard of. To not be able to find anything on someone, no skeletons in the closet, nothing. He was faithful and always responsible and completely trustworthy. And so they concluded, our only chance of finding grounds for accusing Daniel will be in connection with the rules of his religion. And so the administrators and the high officers went to the king and said, long live King Darius. May you rule forever. Imagine how that makes a head go. We are all in agreement. No, you're not all in agreement, a dummy. Probably, here's the case. The other two administrators that were with Daniel are a part of this, and maybe a handful of the other 120 officials. But we're all in agreement about this. Have you ever had somebody come to you before about like, hey, we all think this. Oh, really, who's all? Please tell me who all is. Is it you? It's you, isn't it, right? It's a very small band of people here. We're all in agreement. Who do we know is not in agreement with this decree and this rule? Daniel, right? Daniel would have never agreed to this. We're all in agreement. The administrators, officials, high officers, advisors, governors, that the king should make a law that will be strictly enforced, give orders that for the next 30 days, any person who prays to anyone, divine or human, except to you, your majesty, will be thrown into the den of lions. Now, your majesty, issue and sign this law so it cannot be changed, an official law of the Medes and Persians that cannot be revoked, so King Darius signed the law. Listen. But when Daniel learned that the law had been signed, he went home, he knelt down, as usual, in his upstairs room, with its windows open toward Jerusalem. He prayed three times a day, just as he had always done, giving thanks to his God. Guys, along with Daniel's exceptional spirit that we talked about in verse 3, he was also faithful. He was honest in everything that he did. He was responsible. He was diligent in all that he did. He was full of excellence. And he says here that he was also trustworthy. That Daniel could be relied upon because of his integrity. Daniel always did what he should do, and he didn't do what he shouldn't. And as far as their plot is concerned, these guys' plot is concerned, to catch Daniel in the wrong, they cannot find any problems with Daniel's politics, and so they have to resort to nitpicking his personality and his principles, don't they? Like, we can't find anything in this guy the way that he does his government stuff. We're going to have to really dig deep. We're actually going to have to make something up here, all right? We're going to have to, like, concoct something, conjure something up. There are no disappointing omissions in Daniel's life. There are no tainting commissions in Daniel's life. He was what Paul would call without reproach. Guys, they know that Daniel would betray the king before Daniel would betray his God and his faith. And so in their twisted hearts, they begin to devise this wicked plan. And really at this point, we have to kind of stop for a moment, because there are three choices for Daniel at this point. I want you to clearly see what these three choices are. Daniel could have very easily chosen to just stop praying, and he would have lost fellowship with God. He would have lost his relationship with God. I mean, 30 days, really? Is that big of a deal? 30 days, I'll just stop. I'll pick this up again next month. He could have prayed in secret. We do understand that, right? He could have closed that window, could have gone in his house. Nobody would have known what he's doing in there. Could have prayed in secret, but he would have lost his influence. And then number three, the choice that he actually makes is that he can continue praying and potentially and likely lose his life. And for Daniel, he chose in that moment, in his mind, the lesser of three sacrifices to him. He refused to give up God's glory or the friendship of God, and he lays it all on the line. But it's because of this. It's just as he had always done. You see, it's not like Daniel made this up in the moment. Like, you know, this is my moment to make a stand. And I feel like they'll probably write a book about me later on. No, he doesn't do that. This is what I've done for like 70 years of my life, every day, three times a day. Two facts concerning Daniel's religious life are very evident right here at this point. First, Daniel's religious convictions were not hidden. He was not a secret disciple by any stretch of the imagination. He was not a man who was ashamed to let others know that his allegiance was to God and to God alone. And second, Daniel's commitment was such that he would not compromise even in the face of punishment or death. Guys,
I'll say this very, very clearly here. Just like Daniel, our consistency of character is so crucial. Are you the person in private, at home, throughout the week that you are on Sunday morning? Because let's be honest, it's really easy to be a Christian on Sunday morning in the confines of a church. But are you that way the other 6 days of the week with your family, with your friends, with your coworkers, with the people that you just bump up against? Or are you two totally different people? Consistency of character is crucial. Daniel's impeccable reputation, along with his ongoing practice of prayer, seems to be standard operating procedure for him. We don't read of any turmoil or anguish or conflict of conscience. His enemies did not expect him to flinch at all about continuing his usual practice, even though there was a decree in place that said, you can't do that anymore. Ronald Wallace makes a perceptive observation in this regard about Daniel. He says this, there's no doubt that what kept Daniel when his trial came was this rigid, uninterrupted habit. He had disciplined himself to it day by day for years, over 70 years. And at the hour of crisis, the very consistency of his custom is what kept him faithful. I think that a lot of people will be like, how could I have more faith like Daniel? How could I be like that? Do you know what? It doesn't happen like that. It happens because your life has been like that day after day and year after year. Guys, courage comes from consistency. Like, I want to be more courageous. I want to be bold. That's the word that we heard a lot this morning in Bible study. Daniel is bold. Where do you think he gets his boldness and his courage from? A consistent life. You remember what Jesus says, doesn't he? He says that those who are not faithful in the small things won't be faithful in the big things either. You can't be trusted. If you can't be consistent with the small little tasks given to you, you aren't going to do the large tasks that God gives to you. Guys, courage is not summoned in a moment, in the snap of your fingers. Courage is developed through a lifetime of small, consistent, brave decisions. It was Aristotle himself, just actually slightly after Daniel, who would say it this way, excellence is not an act, it is a habit. You don't just wake up one day and roll out of bed and you're like, you know what I feel like today? I feel like I want to be excellent. Cool, dummy. Be it. Be it for many days. Be it for a week. Be it for a month. Be it for an entire year. Be excellent. We could say the same thing about courage. Courage, guys, is not an act. It is a habit. It's kind of like the autofill feature on the Google search bar. You know how that works, right? It annoys the dickens out of me, actually. Like, you search for one thing one time 10 years ago, and 10 years later, you start to type in one letter, and it autofills with that. Like, I was searching how to get blueberries out of my clothes. And so, like, you just start typing B, and it's like, blueberries out of clothes. Like, I didn't want to know how to get blueberries out of my clothes. That was one time. But this is what it's like in our life about consistency. It's like that autofill feature on Google search. What autofills your bar when you experience hard times? The heat or the lion's lair? Because what you have a habit of doing will come out when the heat gets turned up in your life. That blank in the Google search bar of your heart will not autofill with courage unless you have trained your heart through small, consistent acts of obedience. Guys, you will never, ever develop courage in the moment. Insert any word in there that you want that is good and godly and biblical and moral. You will never have any of those things unless you are consistently practicing those in your life. So let's just stop for a minute and let's just review. In the face of persistent opposition, we stay committed to God and His truth when we stand out. And when we stay consistent. And the next thing that we see in Daniel's life as we continue reading here Is it an imperative, guys, that we stick to trusting God? Verse 11. Then the officials went together to Daniel's house and found him praying, and like little teenagers and tattletales, they went and they went to the king and they reminded him about his law. Did you not sign a law that for the next 30 days, any person who prays to anyone, divine or human, except to you, your majesty, will be thrown into the den of lions? Yes, the king replied. That decision stands. It is an official law of the Medes and Persians that cannot be revoked. By the way, isn't it ironic that the guy who is the authority in all the land has absolutely zero authority? The law supersedes him. He can't get out of it. Then they told the king, that man, Daniel, now listen to this. I also think this is part of their hatred of him. One of the captives from Judah, one of those Jews. You know that Jew that you have up at the very high levels of this land? He's not even one of us. Yeah, that Daniel, that guy, he's ignoring you and he prays to his God three times a day. And this is a very interesting reaction. Hearing this, the king was deeply troubled. Why was he troubled? Was he troubled because Daniel was not doing what he had said? No. He was deeply troubled, and listen to this, he tried to think of a way to save Daniel. This is a very different reaction, isn't it, than you get with Nebuchadnezzar and the three friends of Daniel. He flies into a fit of rage. Darius is upset because I think what he realizes at this point, he's upset, number one, at himself. He's like, darn it. I see what they've done now. He's disappointed in himself. He's angry at these guys. And I think he's just flat out embarrassed. He's like, I've been had. I'm the ruler of a kingdom. And I was just had by these guys over here. And he tries to think of all day long a way to save Daniel. He says he spent the rest of the day looking for that way to get Daniel out of the predicament. And in the evening, the men went together to the king and said again, Your Majesty, you know that according to the law, you know the law that you put into place, the Medes and the Persians say this, no law that the king signs can be changed. And so at last the king gave orders for Daniel to be arrested and to thrown into the den of lions. And the king said to him, this is a really interesting phrase too, may your God, whom you serve so faithfully and consistently, rescue you. Actually, there are some translations where many people believe that that's not may your God. Darius actually believes in faith. Your God will rescue you. Everything, Daniel, that I've heard about your God, that you've told me, that you've lived out in your life, I believe that he's going to save you. That's fascinating, guys. A pagan king who has the faith that God will save. A stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den. The king sealed the stone with his own royal seal and the seals of his nobles so that no one could rescue Daniel. Then the king returned to his palace and spent the night fasting. He refused his usual entertainment and couldn't sleep at all that night. Very early the next morning, the king got up. You can see that there's an element of faith because he gets up at the first crack of light and he hurried out to the lion's den and he got there and he called out in anguish, Daniel, servant of the living God, was your God whom you serve so faithfully and consistently able to rescue you from the lions? I think there's faith here because why else would you run out to the lion's den? He thinks he's alive. He has faith and hope that he is alive. Daniel answers, this is the only time he talks, long live the king. My God sent his angel to shut the lion's mouth so that they would not hurt me, for I have been found innocent in his sight, and I have not wronged you, your majesty. The king was overjoyed and ordered that Daniel be lifted from the den. Now listen to this. This is a very important sentence in this whole story. Why? How does Daniel make this? I mean, obviously God was with him, but here it is. Not a scratch was found on Daniel, for he had trusted in his God. That's the whole point of this story. This miraculous deliverance from this lion's den is simply but significantly because he trusted God. You see, guys, it's as simple and as difficult as that. Like, this ain't rocket science. How in the world do you want to make sure that God is present with you and that God is helping you to be fruitful and blessing your life? Trust in Him in all things. Throughout this entire book in Daniel, it emphasizes the sovereignty of God. God is in control, and he is able to save those who are faithful to him. And since Daniel originally addressed, this is the audience that Daniel wrote to, his message was to Israelites who were suffering in exile in Babylon. His chief goal was to comfort and encourage God's people with the news that despite appearances to the contrary, God was never not in control. I know that line really is confusing. You're like, God is never not in control. Yeah, he's in control, totally in control all of the time. God's involvement is attested to when he tells Darius that God sent an angel in the middle of the night to shut the lion's mouth. Daniel has no scratch on him, for he trusted in God. Again, guys, I've said this phrase already. It's audience participation time. In spite of present appearances, God is in control. This is evidenced by the progression of Daniel through this whole early part of this book. He shows up in Babylon as a prisoner, and then he becomes an initiate, someone who is brought into the royal court to serve the king. He becomes a sage. He becomes the chief sage. He becomes administrator over Babylon. He becomes a personal advisor to the king. He becomes third in command over the kingdom. He becomes the prime minister or the vice president, if you will. And then he becomes, here in Daniel chapter 6, the overseer of the entire kingdom. Guys, that's a pretty good rise, isn't it? Prisoner to overseer of the entire kingdom. Now, that didn't just happen like that. It happened over like 70 years of his life. It is a distinguished career, all because God's hand was on him because of his faithfulness. Why did God save Daniel like he does? Is it because Daniel's like super special? Like he's the one guy in history, in biblical history, it's like, oh my land, he's so amazing. Again, guys, I don't want you to miss it. I want to be very obvious about the text says it was for one single solitary reason, because Daniel trusted in his God and prayed to him in faith. That's why he was rescued. If I were to paraphrase verses 21 and 22 when Daniel speaks, it would go something like this. Darius, they didn't touch one gray hair on my head. And of course, you should know the reason, Darius. I honored my God, I trusted my God, I stayed faithful to my God through thick and thin. I put the whole situation in God's hands, and I trusted him no matter what came. Interestingly enough, do you know what Daniel's actual Hebrew name means? God is my judge. You see, Daniel was comfortable leaving his life completely in God's hands. From the start of Daniel, Babylon seeks to remake Daniel and his friends into its image, immersing them into language and literature, dictating their diet, giving them new Babylonian names, and reflecting the gods of their new land. In Babylon, God's people face complete cultural and theological domination and destruction. And yet, what does Daniel do? He doesn't wage a culture war, because he understands that while he may be in exile, guess who is not in exile? God. God is never in exile. God has been with him the whole time. Don't miss the message that's being communicated through this whole chapter, chapter 6. When the administrators and officials come to Darius to deceptively enact this law, they are saying to him, O eternal king who lives forever, you are so mighty and your subjects need to learn that they can depend on you, Darius, for everything. So let's make a rule that for 30 days people can only bring their needs to you so they can see how able you are to take care of them. And yet what happens toward the end of the story? I want to read it again in verse 16, just one verse. So at last the king gave orders for Daniel to be arrested and thrown to the den of lions. The king said to him, may your God, whom you serve, rescue you. It's like Darius is saying, powerful and authority, Darius is saying, I've done everything, Daniel. I've done everything within my power and my authority to rescue you, and I am out of options. Guys, you know what? God is never out of options. God exhausts every option, and then some. And so we come to the end of the story here in Daniel 6, and we might be tempted to just stop there at verse 23, but there's verse 24, and it says, the king gave orders to arrest the men who had maliciously accused Daniel. He had them thrown to the lion's den along with their wives and children. The lions leapt on them and tore them apart before they even hit the floor of the den. And you're like, ew, that's kind of icky. Why do we include that? Because the Bible is honest, and it's real, and it's true. And we would kind of just stop there, and we're just like, man, I don't know if I want to even read anything else, but we would miss, I'm convinced, the crown jewel of this whole story, because the most amazing thing happens in verse 25. And then King Darius sent this message to the people of every race and nation and language throughout the world. Peace and prosperity to you. I decree that everyone throughout my kingdom should tremble with fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God. He will endure forever. His kingdom will never be destroyed. His rule will never end. He rescues and saves his people. He performs miraculous signs and wonders in the heavens and on earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. Isn't it very interesting that the closing lines of the final historical chapter in the book of Daniel are not a commendation of Daniel? They're not outlining his feats and his heroism. Instead, it's a royal decree from a man who was greatly influenced by Daniel, I'm convinced. He is praising and honoring the God of Daniel for his wonderful feats and his amazing wonders, and he's calling his whole kingdom to do the same thing. Guys, don't be mistaken. Daniel's primary goal throughout this whole book wasn't to win a culture war for God, but it was to be faithful to the king, God. That's the feature of this entire story. If there's one thing in particular that Daniel provides as a model for us, it's that we should make faithfulness to God our highest priority in everything that we do. Chuck Colson said this. I give you like a money quote every week. This is the money quote right here. If the church is to fulfill its role, if the church is to do anything at all useful for the culture, the church must first and foremost concentrate on being faithful to its identity in Jesus Christ. Our goal is to be faithful to the Holy God who calls us to be the church, whether we actually make a difference in our world or whether it falls to pieces around us. You see, I think that we often take the wrong message from Daniel. We often focus on this lion's den and this moment where Daniel is so brave and courageous. And rightly so, that is brave and that is courageous. But I want to read, you've probably noticed if you're following along here, there's one more verse in chapter 6, verse 28. And so Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Here is what we said at the very beginning of things this morning. Strong commitment to God's name and his glory and truth will often set us at odds with others. But we, if we are faithful and we are committed, stand out. We stay consistent. We stick to trusting God. And when we do all of that, guys, it allows us to shine with the glory of Christ. That's the whole point of this. It's not about Daniel. It's not about Daniel's courage and Daniel's faithfulness. Here's what we often do with Daniel in his life. We're tempted to make Daniel the object of our worship in the first half of this book. Daniel's courage and faithfulness in the land of cruelty and captivity can easily tempt us to make him the primary hero of the text. In doing so, we neglect Daniel's very own message that he writes, guys. God is and always will be the hero. Because this book is more than a hero tale that inspires us to live a courageous life for God amid very hard circumstances. It is certainly no less than that. Because the story of Daniel in the Old Testament as a whole is not written only as a method of remembrance and historical reflection, but also as a model for future behavior and actions. In some small sense, Daniel and his friends and other people in the Old Testament are meant to serve as life examples for the faithful who would follow. But that is the potential danger and pitfall of this book. And because the human actors and the events in it are so fascinating, we can lose sight of the fact that this book is ultimately not about Daniel or his three friends, but it is first and foremost about God and his victory over this world. The main purpose of Daniel is to reveal to us who God is, his character, his purposes, his way of working in the world for the good of his people. Guys, what have you often heard? And I've heard this message before, and I've heard this phrase before. In fact, there's an entire book written about this, is that we are to dare to be a Daniel. It's not the message of this book. It's not dare to be a Daniel. You know what the actual message of the book is? It's to dare to do something, but it's to dare to trust in Daniel's God and see what will happen in your life.